On Midwest Week, the strong connections between the Quad Cities and the National Football League. I'm Herb Trix, and my guest this week is Don Doxey, sports reporter for the Quad City Times and Dispatch Argus. Remind us, Don, when and where did professional football begin?
Well, I mean, professional football was played off and on probably back into the 19th century, but the NFL, the main primary football league that we all know and love, began in 1920. It was founded by a group of people really in Canton, Ohio, but the Rock Island Independents were part of that group. They were one of the founding members.
Okay, so the first people that talked about it seriously were in Canton, and that's why the Hall of Fame is located there?
Absolutely, yeah. It actually began with a meeting of people just from a couple of Ohio teams in August of 1920, and then about a month later in September, they brought in other people, mostly from around the Midwest, and Ralph Hay was a Hupmobile dealer. We don't know Hupmobiles now, but it was apparently a popular car in 1920. Mm-hmm. They met in his showroom in Canton, Ohio, and put together this league, and of course it's with us still today.
We say here, anyway, that the Quad Cities hosted the first game, but isn't there some controversy about that?
Well, I think it's the first game played by one of the teams in the league. They played, the Rock Island Independents played the St. Paul Ideals, who were not a member of the league, but so it was more or less an exhibition game. But most people generally consider that to be the first NFL game. I'm not sure exactly when the first game between two members of the league was. That would have been probably a week or so later, but that game between the Independents and the St. Paul Ideals, most people anyway, consider to be the first NFL game.
Okay, so remind us, Don, how different was football in 1920 versus today? Would we recognize it?
Probably not. The players didn't wear a lot of pads. Many of them didn't wear helmets. Believe it or not, it was into the 1940s before they were required to wear helmets. There's very little passing. The rules really strongly discourage passing. In fact, there are just so many different rule changes that were different. Substitutions were different. You couldn't run players in and out. If you took a player out in the first quarter, he was done until halftime. He couldn't go back in. So there was also the ball was bigger and much more difficult to throw. It was rounded on the end. It looked almost like a watermelon rather than the ball we know today. So
it sounds a little bit like rugby.
Actually, yes. I mean, it was actually derived from rugby in a way. And you're right. It much more resembled rugby than what we know today as football.
And what about the dropkick, Don? It just occurred to me that's one of the things we did as kids, but it's not a part of the NFL.
It was a part of the NFL, but it's not something that they used very often. I suspect that the shape and the size of the ball probably made it fairly difficult, but it was part of the game.
Now, one of the early professional players from this area was a guy named Duke Slater, and tell us about him.
Duke grew up in Clinton, Iowa, and played at the University of Iowa, and was really a pioneer because he was black. He was the very first black lineman in the NFL, and for quite a few years in the late 20s, he was the only black player in the NFL, and so he was very much a pioneer in that way. Was elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame finally this year, and of course the induction ceremonies won't be held now until next year because of COVID-19, but had a tremendous career after football as a lawyer and then a circuit court judge in Chicago. So very fondly remembered at Iowa, but, also had a great career in the NFL.
And speaking of the Hall of Fame, you've been talking for years about some other people from this area that should be in, Roger Craig and Ken Anderson. Why aren't they?
Well, that's kind of the question I've been asking in print for years here. Especially Roger Craig was the first running back to have 1,000 yards rushing and 1,000 yards receiving in the same season. First player to score 3 touchdowns in the Super Bowl. I'm not sure why Roger isn't in. I think there's some feeling that there are too many people from the great 49ers teams of the 1980s who are in, and that there's enough of them in, they don't need to put Roger in. But Ken Anderson, who's an Augustana grad, had also had a very great career. You don't hear him mentioned quite as much, but I know there's a lot of sentiment from people, too, that he should be. And he was a great quarterback with the Cincinnati Bengals in the 70s and 80s, and held several records when he retired. Both of them would be very worthy candidates, but their careers now are so long ago that I don't know what the chances are of either of them ever getting in.
Now, Roger Craig, as I recall, he played for Davenport Central, and then it was Nebraska?
Correct, yes. He was a great star at Davenport Central, and then, like you say, at Nebraska, and joined the 49ers in 82 or 83, I think, and played for them for about 10 years, so had a great career.
And also, you've mentioned in your recent story about this, the links to the NFL, that Jim Thorpe played here. Well, how did he get here?
Jim Thorpe played here in 1924 with the Rock Island Independents. Thorpe was already a great athletic hero and everything. In fact, he was the president of the league the first year it existed in 1920 while playing for the Canton Bulldogs. But after that, he kind of kicked around and played for a few different teams. And yes, he was here in 1924 with the Independents.
Wow. And someone else you mentioned was a guy from the Quad Cities, anyway, was a guy named Elmer Layden. And who was he?
Elmer Layden, a Davenport High graduate, he was actually one of the four horsemen of Notre Dame, the great backfield of the 1920s, and got into coaching. Became the coach at Notre Dame after Newt Rockne was killed in a plane crash. And in 1940, he was hired as the first full-time commissioner of the NFL. And it made a lot of different changes. He was the one who actually pushed through the rule that you had to wear a helmet. He also instituted the practice of playing the national anthem before games, which, of course, has now become a source of some controversy. But so he served in that job for, I think, about 5 years. And you know, another guy who really should probably be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame is its first commissioner, but is not. So.
Now, recently, Don, you listed 100 connections to the NFL with the Quad Cities, and we've talked about a couple of them already. I don't guess you just reeled them off the top of your head. How did you find them all?
No, actually, a lot of the research for this was done at the end of the millennium. I poured through records back then to make a list of all of the players who'd ever played in the NFL from here. But it's something else I've written about and researched periodically through the years. So I really just kind of, for the 100th anniversary of the league, really pulled a lot of that old research and everything that I'd done and kind of pulled it together into one package.
So what do? Do you just put in your search terms Moline NFL and names pop up?
There's a great website called profootballreference.com it has a great search engine. You can go in there and find everybody who ever played in the NFL, who attended Moline High School, who was, and I think over the years I've probably put in every little town in this area and every high school and every college. And, it's a lot of legwork to get little bits and pieces. But, in the end, to be able to put together something like this, it's worth it.